Zone Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Well, welcome to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, and we're here every night until 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news, talk, and entertainment show that goes places other talk shows wish they could, but they can't, they don't, they won't, and it's just the way it is, and but we will, because it's really the only way we can do things. It's a very bizarre show. It's one of those shows where you think you know what we're doing, but you don't, and like that. And we can push ahead, and we can plow through, and we can walk, like we like to say, through a pile of cow do, of dog do, of fertilizer.
Well, you don't, you use a stronger word.
Yes, but for the purposes of air, we can walk through a pile of you-know-what this high and come out with a rose in our nose.
All right.
Thank you. All right. That's fine, bud. That's enough.
Yay.
That's good, bud. That's enough, man.
That's enough, man. Come out. The plotting.
Great. Fine. I don't need, you know, you don't have some nut in Carnegie Hall here. Anyway, welcome to the show. Tonight, we're going to try to finish some unfinished business from last night. Is that right? Is that what I heard? We have... I believe we're going to have Jay Santos back on, and he's going to discuss some security questions surrounding who knows what, when, and how they know it, and why they don't know it, and what should you say, and what shouldn't you say. All of this jazz surrounding the situation there with General Petraeus in Tampa, and the hostess with the mostess, and all that stuff, right? You're shaking your head, Margaret.
Well, I think that the situation in Tampa is very, very simple. It is a woman who is in over her head socially, a woman who wanted to be the big social lights of New York, the big social lights of Los Angeles, the big social lights of the big city. She wanted to be all that they are and all that they could be and all that they've been and all that they were. And would you...
Bud, what's the matter?
Wouldn't you think you made your point?
I'll finish my point when I finish my point. Now I'm starting on... This is what happens when you interrupt me. I start again. No, Phil, I'm not...
Margaret, please, we don't have a lot of time.
You have 3 hours. Now I'm starting again. The woman in Tampa...
Bud.
God!
Thank you. The woman in Tampa, this Jill Kelly... imagines herself to be a social butterfly, a social hostess, on a par or a level with what you might imagine in New York, in Los Angeles. Well, she isn't. She won't be. She never will be. Never more, ever after. She always was and always will be. I'm sorry.
That's generally reserved for as a definition of God.
Well, she's not God.
Well, you just said she always was and always will be.
Yeah, that's what you said.
No, what I meant to say was she never was and she never not will be. I don't know.
See, what happens on this show...
Yeah, could I say something?
No, no, you may not say anything. What happens on this show... I'm speaking now. Daddy's speaking, as Margaret says. What happens on this show is that in our race to be as eloquent as we can possibly be... we get too far ahead of ourselves, and we don't, to use your words, Bud, we don't say it too good. And in your case, Margaret, you wanted to put down this Jill Kelly as, you know, as a wannabe, I think is really what you're saying, right?
Yes.
All right. But you kept on going and kept on going until you fell into sort of a verbal trap, a grammatical trap, and she always was and she always will be. And that's something out of my confirmation class when I was a Catholic. I mean, when I was a young Catholic. I mean, when I practiced. I mean, what I'm saying is...
Yeah, see, talking about going too fast. Yeah, but at least he got way... You only just now said 3 words and you... That was too fast.
Well, both of you idiots, the minute you say more than a sentence, it's too much.
That's... She's got a point. What I'm saying is...
You Catholic?
Am I what?
Are you Catholic?
Yeah, I'm Catholic. I was baptized Catholic. I'm Catholic.
But you don't practice Catholicism.
I go to Mass. I'm Catholic. Am I a Catholic like I was when I was... I'm more of a Catholic today than I was... What are we talking about? Okay?
You're the one who brought up God and all that.
I'm just saying, she said that Jill Kelly always was and always will be. That's what they call God. That's what we used to say about God, not some chick that's giving parties in Tampa. Although I'm sure that that probably applies to a lot of people that throw parties in Tampa. They always was, and they always was, is going to be.
Oh, well, thank you very much, Mike Weaver. God.
Who's Mike Weaver?
He's a prize fighter that didn't speak English.
Yes, he did. He spoke a form of English.
All right.
Margaret, you know a lot about prize fighting, huh?
Yes, my father used to take me to the prize fights.
He did?
Yes. I'm very much a prize fight fan. My father and I went to the fights regularly. There was no one else in the family that would go to the fights with my father except I, and I enjoyed it immensely.
Did you see any big fights?
We were in San Diego, and we saw Ken Norton and Muhammad Ali.
You saw the Norton-Ali fight?
Yes, we did.
So, all right, what happened?
Well, what happened was that Ken Norton broke Muhammad Ali's jaw, and Ken Norton wound up winning the fight.
That's right.
Yeah, that's bullcrap. Who's never even not heard of Ken Norton?
Ken Norton beat Muhammad Ali. She's right. You guys were in San Diego, huh?
We were in San Diego. I traveled with my father, and he was doing... At that time, my father was representing a sports brand company. My father was an attorney.
Right.
And he was representing one of the different sports brands. I don't know which one it was. Who makes the baseballs?
That's like Spalding.
Spalding.
I don't think it was that company, but he was there on... basically, he was doing a job for them. He was working for them and had traveled to San Diego for this prize fight. And I went with him.
So you saw Norton and Ali. Did you have good seats?
Yeah, what kind of seats did you have?
We had very good seats. We were on the floor. We were about five rows back.
Did you see the jaw break?
Well, we saw Ken Norton land some very, very good punches. And at one point, Ken Norton, you could see that... Ali's fighting his stance, I don't know what you call it, but the way he was approaching Ken Norton, it was much more defensive.
Yeah, he probably wearing what I call the rope-a-dope.
Yeah, did he go into that rope-a-dope?
Well, he did his rope-a-dope, but he was much more defensive. It was clear that Norton was getting the better of him. No one knew that the jaw was broken. That's something that anyone that tells you they knew, they didn't know. You knew that he was landing punches. But you did not know that he had landed one so powerfully that he'd broken the jaw.
Yeah, well, I remember watching the fight. I do not remember, and of course nowadays when we talk about prize fighting, we're talking about in the heavyweight division where we don't have any, and we have not had since Mike Tyson, we haven't had anybody near as dominant as a guy like Ali or as dominant as any fighter you want to imagine, even Joe Frazier, but... we haven't had one in the heavyweight division now since Tyson, but I remember them saying that he had his jaw broken, but I didn't see it, and I don't think I noticed it.
Yeah, but did he knock him down?
No, he did not knock him down. That was it. He broke the jaw, but it never Ali was never off his feet.
In that whole fight?
Not that I remember, no.
Well, I never saw him fight live. Where was that fight?
It was in San Diego.
No, but I mean where?
It was at the... Well, at the arena there.
At the sports arena?
Yes. The one down in...
Yeah, no, it's down... what do they call that section of town down there, man? I forget.
La Mesa.
La Mesa, yeah. So, in any event, well, that's interesting. And there you go. So, you were a prize fight fan. And I don't know how we got into that, but...
Well, these two were going on and on about something.
Yeah, you two guys were talking about always... Oh, Mike Weaver, that's it. You knew who Mike Weaver was. And I barely know, and these two idiots don't. All right, so thank you very much, Margaret, and thank you, and welcome to the show. Petraeus fails to ease partisan divide over Libya consulate attack. The former CIA director addresses Congress on the Benghazi attack. Republicans still believe the Obama administration tried to downplay ties to terrorists. How do you like that? That's a shock that the Republicans would not believe what the president says. That's almost as shocking as the Democrats not believing what a Republican president says. My God, how things have changed. Yeah, but there's only one difference, Phil. What's that? The difference is the Republicans don't trust Obama, and they're right. Whereas when the Democrats didn't trust Bush, they were wrong. Oh. Well, now, as long as you put it that way. Appearing before two congressional committees in closed-door session, former CIA Director David Petraeus, who's got a hell...
Here, take some water. Get some water.
Thank you. Got the water, bud. Thanks. CIA Director David H. Petraeus, a guy who's got a hell of a lot more on his mind than whether or not Obama is having a comfortable time in the White House right now, that's for sure. Ha ha. This guy's got woman troubles. He's got all kinds of lady problems, man. He's got the kind that has to do with the wife. He's got the girlfriend thing going on. He may have a third. He's got a multiple mistress situation. David Petraeus, the very the loyal, the well-spoken, the very studious, the intellectual general, the architect of the surge, the man respected on both sides of the political divide in America, David Petraeus, go man, go.
Yeah, that guy. Yeah, I like to see what that guy's got in a side drawer of his nightstand. Probably all kind of marital aid.
All right, bud. Thank you.
What are you talking about, man?
That guy, the way that guy gets around?
The way that guy gets around. Anyway, he did little to ease the partisan divide over... the way that guy gets around. Over whether Obama, the Obama administration officials misled the public after heavily armed militants killed four Americans in the Libyan city of Benghazi. We're going to be back and talk more about this. Jay Sandus of the Citizens Auxiliary Police joins us as well. And we have been asking people online on our website in our comment section which of our guests have been the most popular with you and that you'd like to hear brought back on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. And we will do just that for you tonight. Some of the more popular ones. Stick around. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show at philhendryshow.com.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, every night till 1 o'clock here on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. We have with us, we got Jay Sandus of the Citizens Auxiliary Police joining us here tonight from one of the substations. I think one of the things we need to get cleared up, Jay, and I don't mean, I just want people to know what I mean by substation. You don't have a substation in the traditional sense of the word, do you, as a Citizens Auxiliary Police officer?
You know, Phil, you and I had this conversation before where you said I don't have a traditional... we do not have a traditional security force. There's no question about that. However, we are on the front line law enforcement, and so we take our job very seriously, and I think that we may be non-traditional to you. We might be non-traditional to other police officers officers who work in the field. We are very traditional, thanks to the regular citizen, insofar as we, you know, save lives.
I understand that, but the substation that you have right now, is that a traditional substation?
I think it's a traditional substation. It's a place where officers, law enforcement officers, gather and receive their orders for the day. It is a place where we can bring individuals that we do have the right to detain, and by detain, I'm not saying we go out and arrest, because we are not, we do not arrest individuals. What we do is detain them so that we can go over just who they are, the paperwork. We want to look up the paperwork, make sure papers are in order. Well, I shouldn't say their papers are in order, because that sounds an awful lot like, you know, what you see in a lot of Nazi movies and everything, but we do want to see that they're in order, and this is where we hold them. And this is, then they are released.
Well, you detain people as a Citizens Auxiliary Police officer.
Well, Phil, if we're going to go over our rights and, over the thing, our plan of operation as Citizens Auxiliary Police, I'd be happy to do that, but I think we've articulated this before. I think what you want to clear up is this substation like one that you might see? The answer is yes.
Well, it's also someone's home, right?
No, it is not. I don't know what you mean.
It's in someone's home. Isn't the substation you're in right now in someone's home?
Yeah, it is. Sub-Commander Gleason is the gentleman who owns the structure. The substation that I'm in right now is a basement that is underneath the structure that he and his wife and his young daughter occupy. Is that what you're asking?
Yes, sir. That's what I'm asking. So I want people to know, in other words, that the Citizens Auxiliary Police, there is not a Citizens Auxiliary Police station, per se.
Yes, there is. See, okay, we were going in the right direction, and now we're not. We're, you know...
What Phil is asking you, Mr. Santos, I don't know, what is your rank?
As I have told you, Ms. Gray, my rank is Brigadier Admiral.
I'm sorry, what is that?
Brigadier Admiral. I'm a Brigadier Admiral. And we have various ranks. You want me to go through my...
No, you know, Jay, I didn't want to have you come on and explain the entire structural, you know, the organization, but I wanted to know, you're at a substation, and I wanted people to know that where you are is a substation that's located in the basement of Sub-Commander Gleason's house.
That is correct. His name is Timothy Gleason. You can call him Sub-Commander if you want. I'd rather it be me, because it is the command structure of my organization. So Sub-Commander Gleason is, yeah, it's his house.
Okay. We're talking here with Jay Santos. They're at the, it sounds very busy.
It is very busy here, and it's not busy, let's say, at another sub-commander's substation if we use someone else's house. But today it's busy. What you're hearing in the background is not, doesn't really reflect what's happening here. We are busy, but it's not as busy as what you're hearing in the background. Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah, I'm hearing a lot of people.
Yeah, that is a tape that we are... I mean, we roll that tape for radio interviews and for television interviews if we're just doing audio. Okay? And I thought I told your...
Yes, he said that what they'd be rolling a tape.
You're rolling a tape of what?
Well, you can listen to it if you want.
So what I hear are people in the background. There's a lot of people moving around.
Yeah, yes, ma'am.
And that's a tape recording.
Yes, ma'am. And the reason why we do that is to enhance the interview experience and to give you an idea of how busy we can get, but that's not what it sounds like.
Well, when you say you're busy right now.
Right, we're busy. We have four of the sub-commanders are here. We have just going through some paperwork. We're probably going to send one or two of our sub-commanders out. We've got sub-commander Devlin, sub-commander Boone, and sub-commander Shondell. And now I got sub-commander Gleason, who's here with me.
And these guys are doing what?
Well, it sounds like there are women there.
No, that's the tape recording.
All right, let me ask you a question. Do you need to roll that tape?
Is it bothering you?
It bothers me now, yeah. It bothers me now.
Why is that, Phil?
It bothers me because it's not real. What's happening behind you isn't real. You see what I'm saying? In other words, I don't know why.
Why would that bother you? What we're doing is just to enhance experience. You can understand what I'm saying.
Yes, sir, I can understand what you're saying, but for some reason now I'm bothered because it's not... You know, when you do an interview, if you do anything that has... that one would call a journalistic effort, what you're first looking to do is to establish the reality of the person, the credibility of the person. You then ask questions. You get answers that you are looking more and more to ensure are truthful, and whatever else is happening should be truthful.
Well, I think it is truthful, Mr. Henry. We want you to know that we are a very busy substation here.
Yep. All right, well, let me ask you something. Before you started talking to me about the substation, you didn't want to answer questions.
What, Phil, that is absolutely true. Mr. Santos, this is Margaret Gray. You were reluctant to answer questions about the substation.
No, I was not reluctant to answer questions, but Phil was asking in the wrong way. Is that an independent substation? I know what he meant.
Well, you didn't, first of all, you didn't call that home the Gleason home. You said the structure that the substation is under is a place where, you know, Phil?
Yeah, is where Sub-Commander Gleason lives with his wife and daughter.
That's exactly correct, yes, sir.
Well, then why don't you just say it's a home and it's the basement in the home of Sub-Commander Gleason?
Now, that would not be accurate, sir. What's more accurate to say is that it is a basement, well...
Yeah, you know...
Just waste our time and move on with it.
That's what I'm trying to do, but I mean, I'm just... I don't know what he wants me to do.
Just move on and get to the questions.
Bud, I'll ask the questions here, okay?
Yeah, you're wasting too much time. Audience is going, what's this about? What is it about?
No, they want to know that those are real people.
I'm interviewing a guy right now who is at a very busy substation, so he says, and I'm listening to a tape recording of people.
That is correct, Mr. Aaron, but it's only in the way of enhancement. And all we're trying to do is enhancement, you know?
I understand about the enhancement, and I don't feel as strongly as Phil does that we shouldn't be listening to that, but I do, it does give me the creeps, all right?
What gives you the creeps?
Well, the fact that I'm talking to you, Jay, it's already disturbing enough, because I've had a problem with you for many years, but now you're playing a tape recording of people that don't exist.
That is the idea, that's the death. Hold on. 1, 2, 3. That's exactly correct.
All right, hold on, because we do have to take a break, and I don't have time now for you to go into another explanation. We'll be right back with Jay Sanis. We are going to get into Florida socialite Jill Kelly and the Petraeus scandal. Apparently, she is feeling scared and betrayed. Let's find out. She's a woman that people are making fun of, but has she done anything wrong? It doesn't appear that she has. We'll find out. World famous Phil Henry Show.
You want me to turn up the sound of the people behind that?
Phil Henry.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show, and we are with Jay Sanis of the Citizens Auxiliary Police. We have worked out a compromise on the sound effects that you're hearing behind Jay. Apparently, those are... All right, now, am I overstepping?
David Hall is going to be on. Can I...
Go ahead. Margaret Gray, ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen, we worked a compromise out with Jay Sanis and the producer of our show, the executive producer, David G. Hall, that he can play these sound effects of it sounding like his substation's really busy when, in fact, he only has four people there. But he must announce that that's a tape recording.
That was not my understanding. My understanding, if I may say...
Go on, Jay.
My understanding, Phil, was that I was allowed to say that what you hear in the background is not the way it always is. That's right.
No, I didn't hear that. I thought I heard David say...
I don't want to get into an argument about this.
Neither do I.
Go ahead. You can say what you want, Jay.
All right. Well, what I was going to say is this: Jay Sanis is Citizens Auxiliary Police, and what you hear in the background is not the way it normally is around here.
Okay.
You're not happy with that?
No, I'm not happy with that. It's a tape recording of people. It's a sound effects that you're rolling because it isn't that busy.
It's busy for us.
It's busy for you. You got four guys going over paperwork and eating chicken, you said.
No, there's a guy here. Jesus. One of our sub-commanders, Sub-Commander Devlin or Dawson. Which one is Devlin and Dawson? Which one's Devlin and which one's Dawson?
I don't know.
Oh, for God's sake. Who are you? Who are you? I'm delivering a chicken. You're the chicken guy? You're delivering the chicken. All right. We got a guy delivering chicken.
Yeah, I got that, and four guys going over paperwork.
That's correct.
Okay, it doesn't... That would not make the sound that I'm hearing behind you.
Right, that's why I said it's not usually this busy around here, because it isn't this busy.
So it's not so busy that you have four...
So in other words, you don't usually have four guys going over paperwork with a guy delivering chicken. It's usually what?
It's usually empty in here, because this is Sub-Commander Gleason's house. We're usually at my house. God.
Sorry, Jay. I didn't mean to make a thing out of it.
Well, that's all you've been doing, Mr. Henry, since the time I come on your show until the time that I'm right here now and until the time that I will go off your show. That's the way it's been.
All right. Jay Sanis of the... I apologize. Jay Sanis of the Citizens Auxiliary Police. We were going to talk about the Petraeus situation, but you wanted to make a point about the election?
That's correct. Could you guys keep it down, please? I'm just saying that for a fact so you know that I'm not talking to real people there. Does that make you happy?
That makes me happy, but I don't think the audience is really understanding.
No, I think the audience is thoroughly confused.
All right, so big deal, big wow. You know, I'm sorry, Phil. I'm sorry I had a lot of bread and butter. I didn't have time for dinner. I ate a lot of bread and butter.
Okay, so if you belch, is there a way you can put your hand over your mouth?
Phil, I am, I'm guilty of this more than anyone. So I will come to Jay's defense in this instance. It is very difficult to stop that kind of thing from happening once it starts. All right? And if you feel you need to belch, you might as well do it. And let the consequences be damned. And anyone who knows me knows that I'm a lady and knows that I would never do anything unladylike.
Yeah, except on a belching.
And belching, you know something, bud? It's a really funny thing. Even women belch too.
All right. Jay, please, continue.
All right, so you're not mad about a belch?
Please continue.
Fine, I just, you know. So.
Can I ask just one favor?
Yes, sir.
Could you take all those busy people that you have in the background there, and would you lower the noise they're making?
You mean lower the volume?
Yes, lower the volume.
How's that?
Fine. Proceed.
All right. What I was going to say, Phil, is in a recent election that we just had for President of the United States, and I was talking about this with Dan Northcraft, who is your technical advisor up there at your radio show, and it's also your technical director. And I don't know the term, but he's technical. He's technically.
He's my technical director, yeah.
All right. Dan and I were talking, and I said to him, and it sort of caught his attention, I've also said this to a number of other people in media over the last several days. If you look at the general election of Obama and the defeat of President Obama over Mitt Romney, how does it happen that President Obama, yes, he did win a popular vote. I'm not going to go down that road like a lot of people want to do. He did win a popular vote.
You said he won the popular vote. Are trees voting?
Margaret, would you not?
No, I mean, I'm asking, are trees voting?
Would you stop, please?
So trees are voting?
What do you mean trees?
Because you said poplar instead of popular.
What's that got to do with it?
Poplar's a tree.
Yes, so he won the poplar vote. That's great.
Ma'am, I'm sorry if I'm not talking as good as you, or I'm a law enforcement officer.
No, I understand that, but I do think you need to make yourself very clear, and I think you could make yourself clearer if you weren't playing the sound effects of a really busy office to make it sound like it is there with four guys and a chicken delivery man.
I can understand that you're mocking us, ma'am.
Well, look, Jake.
No, excuse me, I won't say this. I can understand you're mocking us, ma'am. I can understand that you're having yourself a little bit of a giggle tonight. And that's fine. That's America, and that's what we are allowed to do. And to the extent that I can provide that environment for you, as a member of, however, you know, humble, my own personal law enforcement organization, we will do that, ma'am. But I also respectfully request, ma'am, that when you disparage our particular law enforcement group, that you do it with more, I don't know what you want to call it, more respect.
So you want me to disrespect you with more respect?
I would appreciate that, yeah. I mean, I know that sounds retarded. And
I don't like that word, okay?
Skip it. I mean, forgive me. I know it sounds developmentally disabled.
Well, I don't think that's the right term either. What I would say is this. I made fun, and I should not make so much fun, because after all, you are a law enforcement organization.
All right, Margaret, all right, I want you and Jay don't say anything. Everybody be quiet. I don't want this to continue down this road. Now, what happened to the sound effects?
Turn it back on. Where's the switch? Right over here. Turn it on. Turn it on! You made it sound like an ass? I don't know where the switch was. All right, can you hear the sound effects?
Yes, we can hear the sound effects. Now, let's continue. I want to just talk about Obama and Romney, and what have you uncovered?
All right, thank you very much, Phil. In the Citizens Auxiliary Police precinct, the headquarters of the Citizens Auxiliary Police, and we did talk with the D.C. Federal Brigade, which is our sister organization in a Washington, D.C. area. We talked to them, and they also expressed concern. President Obama won the popular, okay, Ms. Gray, you feel better?
Yes, thank you.
Won the popular vote, even though he won it, and he did win it. We're not disputing that at all. He won it by a narrow margin. I think you can know, I think everyone's going to agree. Okay, if Obama won the election, which he did do, but it was a very narrow margin, how did he win such a large number of electoral votes? See, that's the part that is very troubling to our analysis team, and we've brought in Major Elvis Newton's grandson, Corey Newton, who attends a very prestigious private university, San Diego State, and has come in to talk with our team. And
San Diego State's not a private school.
Yes, I was going to say, what do you mean a prestigious private university?
He attends San Diego State, which is a private university.
No, it is not a private university. It's a public university.
Wait, you're thinking of University of California, San Diego. That's public. Okay, San Diego State.
No, San Diego State is also a public university.
What's the one that's private?
You may be, what do you mean, what's the one, what's private?
What is the one that's private?
What do you mean, which one is, but there's the University of San Diego.
Yes, the University of San Diego is a Catholic university. What are you, University of Southern California is private, Stanford is private.
And San Diego State is private, that's what I'm talking about. What about all the state, what I'm saying is, Chico State.
You know, Jay, you know, this is a problem we have on our show. You got the, this, you got,
Yeah, see, right there you went sort of quasi effeminate when you get, you got thumb, you lisp, and you, that reflects badly on our organization. And
no, you have some, a semi-official title of a citizen's auxiliary police guy, but you don't have enough brains to know that San Diego State is a public university, not a private school. How do you ever think that you're going to convince anybody of the validity of the seriousness of your questions?
Mr. Henry, I'm simply saying that Corey Newton is coming in to advise tonight. Corey is a math major. I don't know if it's math, but it is something having to do with, I guess, adding. I don't know.
What is his major?
His what?
What is he majoring in?
I don't know.
I'll bet you he's majoring in accounting or something like that.
You say he's taking something having to do with adding.
It's math. Can you major in arithmetic?
Jay, let's just get back to Jill Kelly.
No, sir. I want to talk about what we've uncovered at the Citizens Auxiliary Police about Obama winning a lot of electoral votes. He won a lot of electoral votes, sir, and yet he didn't win that many popular votes. And I'm trying to figure out what went wrong. I think there is a question of legality that we have to look.
All right, thank you, Jay. Hold on, we'll be right back with you. I can't take it any longer.
Yeah, but, I mean, he's going to want to know why he got cut off.
You just tell him that we're going to a commercial break. I can't take listening to that guy babble on forever. Unbelievable. Jay Sanders of the Citizens Auxiliary Police, they've uncovered something. President Obama won only a small margin of victory with a popular vote, and yet all of those electoral votes, gee, how did that happen? Woo! There must be something really weird going on. And Major Elvis Newton's grandson, Corey Newton, who goes to that fine private university, San Diego State, he's taking math. No, wait a minute. He's just taking something that has to do with adding. He's going to be there, and he's going to explain it all to them. We'll be right back. Phil Henry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show.
Ha, 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 ha. God. And welcome back, Jay Sanders with the Citizens Auxiliary Police. Tonight in the South Bay, we're talking about the present President Obama's election victory. And, you know, ever since 2000, Jay, people have been suspicious of presidential elections. It isn't like we all, it's like we all got smart all of a sudden, but the fact of the matter remains, we've had a lot of presidential elections, haven't we?
Phil, yes, we have had a lot of presidential elections. No question about it, and there's no question about a fact. If we've had irregularities in the presidential voting in, for instance, 2000, and I'm not saying we had it this year, but let's say we did, it stands to reason that we've had them in other years. However, it also stands to reason, if we had them in 2000, that we look at these presidential elections. Just let me get some water here. Hey, Dusty, give me a cup of water, will you? Give me a cup of water. I don't care. I'll save me a breast or something.
Two drum.
I'll take the drumsticks. Just give me a cup of water. And in the recent presidential election, give me a cup of water, will you please? In a recent presidential election, you saw that President Obama won by a very thin margin of victory. Now, that's fine. That happens. It's okay. This is America. The rules say you got to have the electoral vote. Would you give me a cup of water, please?
You want a drumstick?
I don't care about a drumstick.
Why don't you get these guys, you know?
I know. It's the same thing, Phil, every night. Who's banning the sound effects?
Look, Jay.
I'm sorry. So what we said was, okay, if Obama won the presidential election by as many votes as he did, that, which is not that many, I'm sure you agree. Wouldn't you agree, Mr. Henry?
Yes, I would agree. He won by a narrow margin of victory. It wasn't that, it wasn't, you know, less than a percent, but it was a narrow margin.
All right. Then how is it he won all those electoral votes? Okay, can you give me a cup of water, please?
Okay. Yeah, we talk to you.
Will you tell those jackasses?
Come on, give me a cup of water. I don't want a wheat tortilla. I don't want a corn tortilla. I don't want to see that Pollo Loco. You know it gives me the runs. Why do you have that here?
Okay,
I don't want any Pollo Loco in this place again. Everybody understand me? You understand me? I don't want Pollo Loco. Give me the water. I'm sorry, Phil.
Well, I apologize that you're in the middle of a busy night, even though you're not as busy as the tape recording you're running to make it sound busy.
Right, we're not that busy, but we're getting, well, pretty soon we'll have to turn the tape recorder off and have the real sound.
Why not have that real sound now?
Because it just doesn't sound as good. Give me a cup of water, will you? Next time you guys go to Pollo Loco, God, can't say that without the water. Please, I'm begging you for some water.
Are you working with idiots or something?
What is their problem?
Mr. Henry just said I'm working with idiots. If you guys want that, are you going to stand for that?
Well,
are you going to stand for that?
Well,
Mr. Henry just said... Anyway, Phil, they went out. I told them not to go to Pollo Loco because it gives me the runs. And the other day, they went for Pollo Loco, and I got to tell you something, the bowl and the upper underneath the seat, man, it took... 409.
Okay, fine. Don't please. You know, everybody wants to be graphic. Everybody wants to describe to me their the most intimate details of what they do in private.
All right, hold on. I got some water finally. What's this? I didn't ask for salsa. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Get me some water. They went out and they got
Never mind. Don't say it. Don't strain yourself.
What are you laughing about, Mr. Harry?
Nothing at all. Nothing. I'm not laughing about anything.
Yeah, you better not strain yourself.
Don't sprain your tongue, man.
Now watch that. That is very vulgar, although it is funny.
Yeah, I'm not spraining my tongue, okay? Hold on, Phil. Is this water? I don't want hot sauce. I want water. You guys are as stupid as... You're the biggest bunch of stumble-bump slobs I've ever worked with in my life. You understand me? Major Elvis Newton would be ashamed if Major Elvis Newton was here. So anyway, Phil, how did that happen? How is it that Obama gets a big, wide margin of victory in the Electoral College, but when it comes to the popular vote, he got a narrower? See, that's suspicious. And that's why we have Corey Newton coming in from San Diego State, which I thought was a private school.
Yeah, San Diego State. So Corey Newton is going to analyze what? He's going to analyze, you have to understand.
He's going to analyze the numbers, you know, see whether or not it got counted right.
Okay, I think you need to understand, if I may, that the popular vote is the popular vote. It can be narrow. It can be narrow. And the president anyone can still have a large majority, if you will, of electoral votes. Because, for instance, you can win California or Ohio or Florida, which are three key states. But let's talk about the swing states of Ohio and Florida. You can win those by a very narrow margin. But if you win them, you get all the electoral votes.
Right.
Do you understand?
I don't quite know.
Well, this is not really that difficult.
We do have Corey Newton coming in.
Yeah, you could get Corey Newton in there all you want, okay?
Well, Major Elvis Newton said that he's contacted his grandson, and he is coming up at this hour.
Is he driving up from San Diego?
Yes, that's correct.
Well, that's 2 hours. What time did he leave?
Well, I think they just called him about 10 minutes ago.
Well, he's not going to be there, man, until after midnight.
Okay.
The point that I'm making, and what is he going to do?
He's going to take a look and see what the problem is.
You got this guy's grandson coming up on a Friday night from San Diego State to look at the problem with what? Jay, I'm telling you, it is a very simple matter that if the president or if Romney were to win the popular vote in a state like Ohio or New York or Florida or any one of these big electoral states, he may have a narrow margin of victory, but he wins all those electoral votes. Isn't that how it works? Yeah, that's how it works.
Hold on for just a minute, Phil. I've got Major Elvis Newton. Yes, sir. He's on the other line. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. All hail. Phil, I just answered my cell phone. Ask Major Elvis Newton. All hail. Major Elvis Newton.
What is all hail?
I'm sorry, ma'am, but that is something we say out of respect. What we just spoke with Major Elvis Newton. All hail.
Because I've never heard you say that.
No, I haven't heard that either.
I say it after I've just physically spoken with him.
After you've physically spoken with him, you mean, okay.
Right. Major Elvis Newton, all hail, said that the way it works, and Major Elvis Newton was surprised that you didn't get it, Mr. Henry, is that you win the number percentage of the votes. He says that's how it works in a convention.
That's fine. That's how it works in a convention for delegates. It doesn't work that way for electoral votes.
All right, well, then you're saying that Major Elvis Newton is wrong, all hail.
Yes, I'm saying Major Elvis Newton is mistaken in that instance, all hail.
No, you don't say all hail.
All right, fine. Thank you very much. Jay Sanders, Citizens Auxiliary Police. We'll get back into the Jill Kelly and Petraeus controversy with Major Elvis Jay Sanders on a later broadcast. This is the world-famous Phil Henry Show. We will continue, though, reviewing that story in minutes. Bye. Welcome back here, the world-famous Phil Henry Show. In a moment, Austin Amarca back with us for a second visit from Don't Mess With Texas to talk about the Texas secession movement yet again. And he is at the Sternin Auction House in Austin, Texas tonight, which I think I just heard there, right, bud?
Yeah, we did have a live line to him just a minute ago, but we have pulled that off the air. Sorry about it, Mr. Henry.
That's okay. That happens more often than not on our show. It happens more than not on our show, but nonetheless.
Well, I think the boys are doing a good job. I think that Jay Sanders, with his fake background.
Yeah, I got to talk to him about that. I don't understand that. But in any event, welcome back to our show. Here's a very interesting statistic that I'm sure we'll probably get into on some level. I don't know if we will with Austin Amarca, but something to keep in mind. Black Ops 2. A new Call of Duty game. In 24 hours, it made $500 million in retail sales around the world. 24 hours, $500 million. Now, ladies and gentlemen, this dwarfs movie money. It just dwarfs it. So if you want to talk about where the real entertainment dollar is, and the only reason why I say that is sometimes we do hyper-focus on movies. And I think a lot of people hyper-focus on movies. Maybe it's because they're in the industry. Maybe it's something that it's a very inside baseball thing. But the real place where we ought to be looking, where are we spending our entertainment dollar? It's right here.
Yeah, that's a lot of kids, though.
It's not kids. That's just it. There's adults playing these games.
You're kidding.
What are you? Are you kidding me, bud? You play them, don't you?
Yeah, but that's different. I'm in a media and everything.
Oh, that's right. You're a media star.
Well, yeah. More than you are. You ever play Black Ops 2?
Do I ever play Black Ops 2?
You mean Black Ops 2?
Yeah.
No, I don't. I wouldn't waste my time. I'd rather drink poison.
Well, okay, then you're not in it. You're not with it.
He's got a point, Margaret. If you don't even deign to play these games, you know, then you're really not connected to what's happening.
Excuse me, Phil. It's not that I don't deign. I don't have any real interest. What good is it going to do me to do something that I don't like?
Sometimes in working in media and working in the field of journalism, you have to do things you don't like because you have to know what people are doing.
And you're going to, oh, look at you. Woo! You're telling me what it takes to be a reporter.
No, I am not telling you that. You ask me a question, I'm answering. Sometimes if you're in a field, the purpose of which is to stay connected to the popular culture, like we do a radio show, like you're a reporter, sometimes you have to do stuff you don't like.
Well, when's the last time you played Blab? What is it called?
Black Ops 2.
Black Ops 2. When's the last time you played it?
I haven't played it, but I do play video games. I do play not only video games on my PC. I play them on the Xbox. I have and will continue to play video games.
Well, the one you play, Mr. Henry?
Yeah.
I play, you know.
Yeah, you don't want to say. You're really big in Grand Theft Auto, taking a chainsaw to a woman.
I didn't do that at all. God.
You did what?
You can take a chainsaw and cut people up, so I did that.
And you think that's a healthy pursuit, and you call that staying connected to the culture. Good God Almighty. I don't know. God himself, Jesus himself, is going back into the tomb. Jesus is no longer risen from the dead. He'd rather stay dead. Excuse me.
You going to the toilet?
Ow! Give me the mic. Don't you ever say that to me again.
Well, Margaret, that's where you're going. Ow! Don't hit me.
Then don't say it.
God. This woman, this liberal, is, you can go to the toilet now.
No, I want to hear what you're going to say.
Then you can come back and sit down here.
I have to go to the toilet.
Well, for a woman that is so liberal, you know, you're pretty liberal with the swinging, you know, hitting people.
I hit you with a piece of paper, oh, big baby.
All right. Welcome back to the show here, folks. So, Black Ops 2, $500 million in 24 hours. Man, that's a lot of jingle. That's a lot of frog skins, as, you know, some guy I used to work with in a news department somewhere used to say. In fact, he said it too much. In fact, it was, after a while, it really...
What'd he say?
This guy used to say 500 billion frog skins. That's what he meant for dollars. Anyway, that's a lot of bread. Austin Amarca is with Don't Mess With Texas. It's a group of concerned citizens in Texas who are, they want to secede from the union. And Austin, you and I talked earlier in the week, and where are you now? You're at the Stearns Auction House.
Phil, that's right. I'm at the Stearns Auction House is in Austin, Texas, and we are here for the first of two auctions of some of the most beautiful thoroughbred horses in all of America. And we even have some beautiful Australian thoroughbreds here. And we also have Jim Bilbray, who is with us from back east in the upstate New York around Saratoga. And, of course, the Risley brothers are in from the United Kingdom, and they have a couple of very magnificent animals, one of which is... The Shine, which, as you know, was second in the Derby last year. So there's quite a crop of beautiful animals for auction here tonight.
Okay, let's talk about Don't Mess With Texas and where you're at tonight. The press release on the film Lincoln pretty much says it all. I didn't read it to my audience. I wanted you to be on the line. But essentially what you're saying is this is another Hollywood tactic to discredit what they see as the reactionary right, but what, as you see in your organization, other people in Texas, as your right to self-determination, and that the liberal tactics in Hollywood with their multi-million-dollar media machine will not slow you down. Explain to my audience what you mean by that.
Well, Phil, I thank you for that. This week, as a matter of fact, tonight, the movie Lincoln is coming out across the United States of America. It's going to be appearing on movie screens all across this country. I have no problem with people going to whatever movie they want to see and enjoying whatever kind of entertainment they want to enjoy. But while we are fighting for self-determination in the state of Texas against what we consider to be a very dangerous federal initiative and federal move toward even stronger federal control over the states, and I just saw Jesse Ventura, the former governor of Minnesota, who is making the case for the states, and he made it very eloquently, as he usually does, saying that Obama needs to move more towards states' rights and away from this disastrous federalism that he is promoting. Hollywood, for their part, always predictable, always well in the pockets, or should I say they have in their pocket the liberal political elite of Washington. Hollywood is sparing no expense in discrediting states' rights tonight by the release of this movie.
Well, it's a movie. It's about President Lincoln. Let's talk about what it's about.
Yeah, it's about President Lincoln, and that basically means that the states' rights secession initiative by the people of Texas. Basically, what Hollywood is saying is, watch how we make you look like dumb cowhands. And stupid, You know, I'm gonna use the phrase that was used by Jim Tin Cannon. It was one of our press aides who said, "I know what they're thinking right now in Washington. We want to turn every woman in Texas into a bunkhouse slut." And I tell you, nothing could be more shocking and yet more true.
Every woman in Texas into a bunkhouse slut.
That's right, because this movie, this Lincoln, is a basic flat statement by the liberal Hollywood elite and the liberal Washington elite and the liberal New York, you know, any of the elites, basically where the liberals gather, saying you can take your state's rights initiative, your self-determination in Texas, and all you cowhands and bunkhouse whores, and you can, you know, jump off a pier with it because...
All right, let's we're, you know, you're kind of walking around this. What you're basically saying is the movie Lincoln is a direct attack on the Texas secession initiatives, on the secession initiatives in other states, on the signatures that people say. You're saying the movie Lincoln is an attack on them.
That is exactly what I'm saying.
You are saying that a film that was based on a book written over 4 years ago, before any real serious talk of and I don't think any of this secession talk is serious, okay?
Well, all right, Mr. Renner, you should come down and talk to my organization then, you know?
I'm talking to you, and I know you're serious, but I would, with all due respect, say to you, I don't think anybody other than you, perhaps, sir, is serious about seceding from the Union. They're making a statement about how uncomfortable they are with the federal, the enhancement, if you will, of federal power, control, or intervention in the, the lives of people in states. And, you know, that may be a good thing, maybe a bad thing. We can argue that.
What you just said, you know, I think I'm making more sense. I think what you're saying...
What I'm saying is that What don't you like about the movie Lincoln?
I don't like the fact that the movie Lincoln is a slap to the face of every American who values self-determination, who values freedom of initiative, states' rights. The movie Lincoln, released by the Hollywood elite, funded by the Hollywood elite, and with millions and billions and millions of dollars behind it, is obviously an effort to make me look like some dumb cowboy.
And to turn every woman in Texas into a bunkhouse slut.
Yes, sir.
What does that mean?
Well, Jim Tin Cannon is one of our press aides, one of the brightest guys I know. Jim is educated at one of your big Eastern universities. He is a native of Texas, but he did graduate from Harvard. He was on the Harvard Lampoon magazine staff there, the very prestigious humor magazine. But Jim is a conservative right down to his cowboy boots. He's a conservative right down to his walking shoes. And when he says that this is going to make us all look like barnyard, bunkhouse?
Yeah, I said it, bunkhouse.
Okay, Jim, I'm going to get Jim on the phone here in a minute, but...
No, that's all right, go ahead.
All right, well, he don't want to talk to you.
I didn't say that, just finish, because we got to take a break.
All right, so he said that it would turn every woman into a bunkhouse slut. What that meant was, when the northern media elite come into Texas to promote their movie, Lincoln, and they come into Texas... To bring all the Hollywood stars, to bring the big Hollywood machine in here, every woman in Texas is going to abandon the Texas Secession Initiative because she just can't wait to turn into some kind of a barnyard whore for Tommy Lee Jones or whoever they schlep in here to sit around and drink the bad coffee and talk to some guy on an ice-cold TV set about the movie.
All right, well, hang on the line here, if you wouldn't mind, Austin. Austin Amarca at the Stearns Thoroughbred Auction in Austin, Texas this evening, as he talks with us about Don't Mess with Texas, which is their organization interested in seceding from the Union. And they think the movie Lincoln is a slap to the face. Well, obviously, Lincoln was the president that saved our country. He's the president that held the country together. So if you think the life of Lincoln, a movie about Lincoln, the very existence of a man named Abraham Lincoln is a slap to the face of secessionists, yes, he is. I don't think there's an argument there. We'll be right back. It's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
right, welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. We are going to talk more about General Petraeus' appearance in Washington and his statements to the congresspeople that were, you know, talking with. We have Austin Amarca from...
What did you just say? You said the what?
About what?
You talk about Petraeus, then you go...
Yeah, you mumbled. You swallowed the last few.
Yeah, you swallowed the last few words like you're all going slurp, slurp. Well,
I'm going to kick your ass. You want that to happen right here? Do you want everybody in Radio Land to hear you cry?
No.
What did he say?
Never mind what he said. Put Mr. Mark on hold.
Oh, well, Mr. Henry, I'm a grown man.
Slurp, slurp, huh? You didn't what?
I didn't mean anything.
You didn't mean anything? You're just trying to be funny? Is that it?
I think that's all he's trying to do, Phil.
Who asked you? Did I ask you?
No.
So you say that I swallowed my words slurp, slurp. Is that what I believe I heard you say?
Yes, sir.
Do you want to have people hear you cry?
No, sir.
Because it'll happen. It'll happen. You know that, right?
Yes, sir.
Because that's outrageous, what you just said, bud.
What did he say?
He said slurp, slurp.
You mean he said slurp, slurp as in...
Pretty much.
What is it with you all of a sudden?
Well, I was...
What are you doing all of a sudden? I got this guy over here with slurp, slurp, and you're going...
Well, I didn't want to use the word...
Yeah, I mean, she's trying to clean it up.
Trying to clean it up? That's what you call trying to clean it up? Why did you just not say anything? How about that?
Why don't you calm down, Phil, and quit trying to impress everyone with your control over the show?
Oh, so that's it. You know what I should do? I should do what I've been threatening to do.
Let me guess. Fire everybody?
That's exactly right. You want me to? Oh, everybody's quiet on that one. The next time you say anything like that, bud, I will beat you almost to death. I will hold your face up to the microphone while you whimper so everyone can hear it. Then I'll toss you into the street just in front of a passing van or truck, preferably a steamroller, but just any piece of heavy equipment will do. Margaret, the next time you go, oh, or anything like that...
You're going to kick my ass and hold my bloody face up to the microphone?
No, but I may hold your bloody face up to something else.
You filthy... Why, you know what I'm going to have my husband do? I'm going to...
You gonna kick my ass?
Mr. Henry, that was out of line.
Yeah, that was bad to say to a lady.
Oh, all of a sudden it's bad for me to say to a lady, but you're sitting here with the whole slurp slurp.
Yeah, it's just saying it to a guy.
Yeah, Mr. Henry, that was bad. I'm standing up for the dignity and the rights of Ms. Gray.
Thank you very much, Robert. I'll be in the toilet if you need me.
Yeah, if you need me, I'll be in the toilet. What's that about?
Oh, my God. What do you think I meant by that? I meant if he needed some help verbally. If he needed my mouth, I don't mean that. I mean...
Just shut the bathroom door. You guys really disappoint me, you know. You especially, bud. You're not a comic. Quit trying to be funny.
Yeah, well, maybe some nights neither are you.
Maybe some nights neither am I. Okay, fine. But you... What do you mean, meaty... Beat your ass. Slurp, slurp. Man, I'll tell you what. I gotta kick your ass around the block for drill just on that one alone. And then along comes your friend. And since when did you get all friendly with her?
I'm just saying, right is right. And she was right.
She wasn't right when she went, oh,
maybe not there, but she was right when you said that you'd hold her head up to a...
Yeah, you said you'd hold her mouth up to a different style of microphone.
I never used those words at all. I was a lot more subtle than that. And that's the whole key. Subtlety. Subtlety. Understand?
No.
Fine. Austin Amarca on the line with us here now from the Stearns Auction in Austin, Texas. Austin, sorry about that.
That's all right, Phil. I understand things can get very heated, and I'm here to help in any way that I can. Believe me, you believe that I'm here to help you, don't you?
I believe that you're here for an interview here, sir. You don't have to help me with anything.
All right. But I certainly do want you to know that I understand the pressures. I wish you'd understand my pressures. You know, when I say to you that...
Well, let's talk about your pressures. Don't mess with Texas. The film Lincoln is debuting tonight nationally.
It is a film about our 16th president, and perhaps in the minds of some, the greatest president that ever lived. He was the president during a civil war. He was a man that maintained holding the Union together at all costs was absolutely the essential thing to do, freeing the slaves and moving us forward, moving us ahead as a country. He paid with his life, but in so doing, our country lasted. And, you know, as I've often said, some of the most patriotic people that I know are Southerners. Some of the most God-loving, God-fearing, and country-loving and flag-waving people I know are Southern people. So I don't, I'm not exactly sure what it is you find threatening about a movie about Abraham Lincoln.
The thing that we find most threatening, if you want to call it that, Mr. Henry, and I don't call it threatening, because I don't feel we are threatened by Abraham Lincoln's memory or any film. I feel we are given an unfair opponent. When you talk about Abraham Lincoln and you talk about him in these very high-flung terms, and certainly President Lincoln deserves that kind of praise, and the facts of his life are obvious to all of us. But it's not fair to me or to my organization, because is that bumper music that I'm hearing and I got to shut my mouth again after you and that woman went through the whole goal? And after
you don't have to just hold on, okay?
All right, but would you promise me when you come out of this next break that you're not talking to the guy with the plate in his head about slurping something? And that you...
We'll be right back. World famous Phil Henry Show, and we'll get right to the heart of the meat of the matter, if you'll pardon the expression, on Austin DeMarco's problem with the film Lincoln, debuting nationwide tonight. World famous Phil Henry Show.
All right, I'm back now, and I won't go all home.
Phil Henry.
Wow.
Down a dirt road with a bucket of buttermilk to make me change my mind.
All right, hold on. Austin DeMarco joins us from Austin, Texas this evening. No coincidence. I mean, it is a coincidence, Austin, because you are from Texas. What part of Texas?
Well, like, I come from eastern Texas. I come from Kilgore, Texas. Not from Austin, Texas, although Austin is just to the south of us, the southwest of us here, but I certainly do love Austin, Texas, I'll tell you that.
Well, it's a great city. And they're down for the Stearns Thoroughbred auction there. I'm going to bring on the line here Vernon Dozier, who is a high school teacher. He's a educator, teaches not only social studies, he also teaches history to the upper class, the juniors and seniors at Belmar Academy in Glendale, California, and is a member of the board there at Belmar Academy. And Austin joins us on our newsmaker line. Austin is with us in Texas, and we have Vernon Dozier with us in Southern California. Mr. Dozier, good evening.
Good evening, Phil.
And Austin DeMarco is with us in Austin, Texas.
How are you, sir?
I'm very good, sir.
All right. Vernon, your take on the Lincoln film and its effect on the secession fever movement, what have you, across the country. I don't think there's any fever.
No, there's no fever to any secession movement in the country right now, Phil. I think what Mr. DeMarco is saying is there's very strong feelings concerning the states' rights and concerning, I think a lot of this has to do with Obamacare, and I think it has to do with the, taxation, which is what our Supreme Court essentially called Obamacare. The Supreme Court, in interpreting the Obamacare legislation, said that the Congress of the United States has every right in the world to levy a tax, and that is exactly what this is, and I agree with that interpretation. I would also go so far as to tell you, Phil, that I'm a Southerner myself. I come from Georgia, which is a deep South state, and I honor the memory of Abraham Lincoln, and I don't see Abraham Lincoln's memory as a threat to any American. The memory of Abraham Lincoln enhances us as Americans, and it should be something that we are proud of. I don't see it as a threat. I certainly don't see the film as a threat. I encourage my students to see it. I encourage their parents to see it. And I can only tell you that if Abraham Lincoln were alive today, the Abraham Lincoln that I have read of in history, the Abraham Lincoln that I think we all know, I'm sure he would be very decisive, and he would be extremely swift in how he dealt with anyone that wanted to blacken his memory. Well, excuse me, sir, just one more thing.
Go ahead.
Anyone that would want to blacken his memory or insult his memory. And I think with all great respect to Mr. Marca and other people in this country, other patriots, although I don't know how you call someone that wants to secede from the Union a patriot. I think you have to call them what they are, and I say this with all due respect to the gentleman, but I think the word traitor has to be mentioned sooner or later. But,
all right, let's hold on here for just a minute, sir, if I could. You just used a very charged word right there when you called me a traitor. I don't think it was that charged. Well, you calling me a traitor, I will call Obama a traitor to the aspirations of the people of Texas.
Why does Obama have to have any special loyalty to Texas? He has a loyalty to America the same way. But we're talking about Lincoln right now, aren't we?
Well, that was the initial. Your comments, Mr. Marca, had to do with Lincoln.
All right, let's talk about Lincoln. You calling me a traitor. Lincoln's the one.
Hey, watch how you talk about Abraham Lincoln, okay?
Sir, I'm not going to disrespect Abraham Lincoln.
Just watch how you talk about it. I'm a Southerner too, sir. But I'm a patriot of the United States of America, and I'll tell you, I'll use the word again, traitor, okay?
You know, sir, I've got to get some water. Would you just
go ahead? I got this guy on a run, you know.
Oh, hold on for a minute.
No, I can tell. This guy's probably got it running down the inside of his thigh right now.
Okay, I just got some water, and I just drank the water, and then I went back into my kitchen to put the water glass down, and my wife has the radio turned up, and I heard you say I've got it dribbling down the inside of my thigh. Did you not say that?
I said that.
So that means I'm scared.
That means I think you're in over your head. You're talking to me. I'm an educator, okay?
All right, sir. You're an educator, and good for you.
What do you do?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. I was coughing.
I said, what do you do for a living?
I work on kitchen cabinets.
Oh, baby, that's good.
All right, let's not put each other down.
Woo!
That's good. You work on kitchen cabinets. What does that mean? You go in and eat what's inside of them?
Hey, I'm not putting you down.
Gentlemen, let's not get into a little childish game of calling people names or putting down what we do for a living. I thought you were doing very well, both of you, in engaging each other on this topic. Let's just go ahead and stay there, okay?
This guy is using words like traitor, okay?
Well, let's talk about that without getting challenged. If you want to secede from the Union, let's not use the word traitor, but I think what you were trying to say...
Mr. Henry, can I just say, I know what I was trying to say, and I said to this man, all right, you don't like traitor. I'll tell you one thing that I would not call you a patriot. You are not a patriot.
Why am I not a patriot?
Because you do not believe in holding together with the Union, with the United States of America. You want to go off and start your own little country. What's it going to be called? Texas land?
No, sir, it would be called Texas.
Oh, well, that's original. Would it be called a Republic of Texas or the Land of Texas or the Kingdom of Texas? How about the Kingdom of Texas?
Well, it'd be better than the Kingdom of the United States. We're
Now, we're talking about Lincoln. You want to talk about King Obama?
That's who I'm talking about. I'm talking about King Obama.
No, sir, you were talking about King Lincoln.
You were saying that the movie about Lincoln was threatening to any secession or self-determination movement, as you were saying, in the United States.
Well, I think the movie Lincoln, yes, is a threat to those of us who see ourselves as patriots.
Right there, that's what I'm saying, Mr. And you are not a patriot unless you're talking about being a patriot to the Texas land. Okay,
I think you're being purposefully offensive. You keep calling it Texas land.
All right, well, that's what it is. That's a little game you people are playing. You want to call it the Kingdom of Texas, Texas land, Middle Texas, like they had in that, what did they call that, the Hobbit movie? Remember that? Did you see that?
What is that? Are you studying the Hobbit movie to learn more about how countries are laid out geopolitically? Is that what you're doing?
Yeah, sir, I know more about geopolitics than you will ever know, okay? Excuse me for saying this, sir, but I crap out of my rear end every morning. More knowledge.
All right, let's watch it, okay? You're an educator. You don't have to talk that way.
I apologize, sir.
Crap out of your... You know, I agree with Mr. Henry. I'm shocked. You're an educator. And you're talking like that. I have to use the kind of language I use to get through to a guy like you, okay? Because about the only thing you do understand, if you sit down to read anything, sir, you're sitting down on a chair that's got a hole in it, and generally your pants are off. Well, I, sir, you know what? I've sat down in chairs before in my life with my pants off, and I haven't necessarily been sitting on a toilet. So what do you see? That shows how smart you are. Wow, you ready for this guy?
You know, you guys are, again, getting sidetracked here.
Are you ready for this guy? What are you talking about? Is he ready for me? You just got done saying that you've sat down on chairs with your pants off, but that what there wasn't a hole in the seat. No! Well, what were you doing?
Okay, come on, man. Three guesses. Use your imagination.
Oh, okay. Yeah, what a... You know something, Mr. Danger? Or not Danger. What's your name again? My name is Dozier. Right, I heard this guy that comes on Mr. Henry's show occasionally, a guy by the name of Vernon Danger. Oh, wait, my name is Vernon Dozier.
Talking about Doug Danger?
I'm talking about Doug Dozier. My name is Vernon Dozier. I'm talking about Doug Dozier.
Doug Danger is the guy that comes on my show.
Well, then who's Vernon? All right. My name is Vernon Dozier. It's very clear that Mr. Henry is referring to a guy by the name of Doug Danger. Well, it's not clear to me. No, I don't think there's too much that is clear to you. But you're the guy that said, sir, you can't imagine.
All right, you know what? Let's just stop it right here and let me thank both of you gentlemen, okay?
Oh, come on, man. I was just ready to go in for the kill.
You're ready to go in for the kill. You two guys were talking about how it's possible to sit on a chair without a hole in the seat with your pants down.
No, he was. I know. All right, well, then maybe you'd like to explain to Mr. Henry and his listener.
No, he doesn't need to explain because I think I know and my listeners know. You're the only one that doesn't know.
Yeah. Wait a minute. You sit down in a chair. Your pants are down. Oh, well, yeah. If you're talking about that, I thought you were talking about the other thing. What other thing that you need toilet paper for?
Okay. Are we done yet with that question?
I'm clear on it, yeah. See, Mr. Henry, I think what we have here, Mr. Dozier has got his nose so far up in the air as he walks around. He's one of these people, if you were a waiter, Mr. Dozier, you'd walk around with a serving tray elevated above you as if you were carrying the queen or something. You know, I bet you if you was a waiter, were you ever a waiter? I was in college. Did you bring people their breakfast with it held up in the air? I did, yeah, because I felt it had more class.
Oh, man. Okay, what happened there?
They both hung up.
I think they both thought you were laughing at them. They both thought I was laughing at them? I was actually laughing at Mr. Amarca's line about him walking around. It had more class. Man, that's something else.
Well, that was one for the books. I sat here very patiently listening to that. You got angry with me when I went, oh, and yet you had Mr. Amarca talking about sitting on a toilet and his pants are around his ankles.
Margaret, I didn't have him saying anything, okay? These two guys were talking to me about the secession aspirations of people in Texas, the film about Abraham Lincoln, and, you know, one of them was a guy that advocates this so-called secession self-determination. The other was a high school teacher. So those comments came as a sort of sidebar or ancillary. We got sidetracked. In the case of you and Bud, it was the whole purpose of your comments.
Now, how do you figure that?
I was the one that was talking, and you guys start asking me questions about slurp, slurp, glug, glug, all that stuff.
Well, again, I don't think you had to make... The point that I'm making, though, is that that was far from any kind of a literate rendering of a discussion or debate on self-determination. And I think what you needed there was something a little more intelligent.
Well, that's why we brought Mr. Dozier on. He's a high school teacher. But even he, and he's, you know, he gets sidetracked, even he did not prove to be the brightest bulb on the tree, you know.
Well, I mean, I don't think it's all that stupid for a guy not to know what a guy's talking about. He's saying, how come you're sitting on a chair with your pants down around your ankles? And the seat didn't cut out.
I've never heard of anyone describe a toilet as just sitting down on a seat with a hole in it. I've never heard that, okay? And I can see how it would confuse people.
Why?
Because he doesn't know what he's talking about. Where are we going now? You know, where are you? Are you talking about sitting on a toilet? Then say a toilet. So the next thing you know, this guy's saying, wait, you're sitting on a seat with your pants down and it doesn't have a hole in it.
I think that you bring on people, Phil, that you're impressed with. You think they're very intelligent. You've read a book by them or you've read some comments. And they're really blithering idiots and you don't see it.
Yeah, it's, I got to agree with that one, Mr. Henry.
Oh, really? Is that right? Well, I'll give you a little, just...
No, but please comment on what I just said.
Okay, I will. My comment is this. The people that I have on my show are no less intelligent. See, all three of them now, folks, are looking at me like, ooh, we got you. You just said it. Are no less intelligent.
Yeah, but you did say it, but you did say it wrong.
Yes, I said it wrong. The people I have on my show, including you three, are no less intelligent than about 90% of the idiots that I see or hear on other shows, okay?
Well, I would expect you to say that.
No, you wouldn't expect me to say that. I will put even you three up against any clowns that I see on these other shows, I'm telling you. And like right now, there's this guy, Bob Beckel, who's a consultant on Fox, right? You know who Bob Beckel is?
Yeah, I've seen him. What about him?
I'll tell you what about him. The guy is a Democratic consultant. He's a politician. He's a this. You know what he's doing right now? He's sitting shoveling Twinkies into his face on The Five.
He's doing what?
He's sucking down Twinkies, okay? And he's eating Hostess Ho-Hos and all kinds of stuff.
About now.
So he's sitting there eating Twinkies. He's laughing. He's got the cream all over his nose. And you guys are making jokes about me. And there's Beckel there with all kinds of white cream on his nose.
Oh, what a child.
Oh, God.
Yeah, that is being crude.
I'm being crude. A minute ago, you guys with the slurp slurp. 877-876-7445. Let's take a break. David G. Hall on the line. Jay Sanis. We already had Jay. Jay's gone, right? Get him. Yeah, the poor Jay. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. We're going to bring on Bobby Dooley in just a moment here. We also have with us Herb Sewell. Mr. Sewell is a frequent contributor to our program. Herb Sewell, by the way, and we always feel we need to let you know, he is a convicted felon now in a halfway house here in the state of California, convicted for crimes against children, including sexual abuse. He is on our newsmaker line, Bobby Dooley, on our newsmaker line. Ms. Dooley, how are you? What's going on?
Yes, thank you, Phil. I'm on your program this evening along with my husband, Steve, to comment on Fox News Channel. I know your feelings about Fox News Channel, and I think I know Ms. Gray's feelings especially as, I guess, and I don't think I'm talking out of school as your resident liberal. I have been, for the longest time, I think probably more of a conservative. But tonight on the Fox News Channel, I saw behavior that I really thought was well below what I think are standards that have been set by that network, which I think are very high. On their program this evening, on a show called The Five.
I think I saw what you're talking about.
Right. Well, could I finish what I'm doing here?
Margaret.
Sorry, but I did see what she's talking about.
Yeah, can I finish?
Yes, you can finish.
On the program this evening called The Five, they featured Mr. Bob Beckel, who is one of their consultants, eating a variety of Hostess products to comment on the fact that the Hostess company, the makers of these Twinkies and Hostess cupcakes and so forth, is going out of business.
Right.
In the process of showing Mr. Beckel eating these Twinkies and these cupcakes, the camera then went to Kimberly Guilfoyle. Let me see.
Yes. No, Kimberly Guilfoyle had on a black tie and stretched across.
Right. My husband Steve said that Kimberly Guilfoyle was wearing a black tight short dress that stretched across, and by that I mean it stretched across a certain part of her body and was stretched in a inviting or provocative way?
Yes. Kidding me?
All right. The point that I'm making, Phil, is that when they went to Kimberly Guilfoyle, she was eating one of these Twinkies. It was a tape, because it was in a slow motion, and they showed her biting into the Twinkie in slow motion. What happens, Phil, when you eat a Twinkie, I'm sure you're familiar with those.
We're familiar. It's got a cream filling.
Yes. So I don't want to get into any detail, but when you slow that down and you show a woman who is of obvious attractive qualities as Kimberly Guilfoyle, there is no doubt in my mind what it is that Fox News is attempting.
Yeah, let's just remember, be very slow about it and careful. You don't want...
I understand, Mr. Dooley. Herb Sewell joining us from Los Angeles tonight. Herb, any comment?
Well, I can tell you this, Phil, that the Kimberly Guilfoyle segment that Ms. Dooley is talking about, I did see as well. Now, I saw her eat a Twinkie, and yes, I saw the cream filling in the Twinkie. And again, you remember that we're talking about something that I don't think has to go in the direction that the Dooleys would like to take it, and I have been on programs before with you, Ms. Dooley, where you've taken it places that I didn't want to go. And to that extent, I would defend myself against some of the public commentary that I've heard about Herb Sewell, saying that I have kidnapped or I have taken people thus and so. I believe you kidnapped me this evening, and you took me to a place where I am now forced to comment on whether it is acceptable to show Kimberly Guilfoyle in slow motion eating a Twinkie. And I think it's childish.
I don't think it's childish, Mr. Sewell, when you see what I saw. What did you see?
I saw a woman eating a Twinkie. I saw a woman eating a cream-filled Twinkie.
Yes, and you in slow motion? What is your comment about that?
I when you say slow motion...
Well, there is a point to be made. Why would they show her eating it in slow motion?
I don't know, but I did not see... I did not see... what they are saying.
All right, hold on. We'll be back with more Herb Sewell, Bobby Dooley, and the Hostess Twinkie segment on The Five on Fox News this evening, where they showed Kimberly Guilfoyle eating one in slow motion. And I'd like to see that say. I haven't seen it. Do you, Bud?
Yeah, we'll try and see if we got it on the on a YouTube. Yeah, look up on TubeView.
Yeah, look up on TubeView. We'll be right back.
Phil Hendry.
But I can tell you that Dana Perino eating a Twinkie is...
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Oh, well, good evening and good morning. Saturday, so officially it's Saturday, the most blessed day of the week, and it's here, and we're really happy. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show. I'm here with Margaret Gray, Bud Dickman, and Robert Leonard, and we also have Herb Sewell and Bobby Dooley on the line, and we're also going to, after we get finished talking about what we're finished talking about here, Kimberly Guilfoyle eating a Twinkie in slow motion, then we'll get into some other things.
Mr. Hendry, it's Bobby.
Go ahead.
The laugh that you give that, you minimize the importance of it. And
Herb, go ahead, Herb. Just the two of you talk among yourselves, okay?
Wait. Hold on. I'm going to talk to him, but you weren't going to comment.
I just thought I'd kick it off, you know.
Why did you laugh?
Why did I laugh? Because you raising the issue of Kimberly Guilfoyle eating a Twinkie in slow motion...
I would like to comment, if you don't mind.
You can comment, but I'm asking Mr. Hendry why he laughed.
I can tell you why he laughed, because you're making an issue of a woman eating a Twinkie.
Mr. Sewell, without bringing up your past criminal activity, because it was perverse, I don't think that it leaves much to the imagination of one such as you to know what it is I'm talking about.
I know what you're talking about, Ms. Dooley. I know what you're talking about.
You do?
Yes, I do. I just, first of all, don't know if it happened or not.
It most certainly did happen, Steve.
Ms. Henry, we have a, and I can tell you, my wife got a brilliant.
Don't talk that close to it.
I can tell you, my wife, I heard a scream, and she called me in the living room at that time.
What happened, Phil?
You heard a scream.
Yeah, can I,
Hold on, I'm talking to you. You heard a scream.
Well, don't talk over me to my husband. I'm a liberated woman, you know.
Ms. Dooley, if I might, it's Herbstool. We are simply trying to hear what your husband is trying to say.
Mr. Henry doesn't need you helping him. Don't talk over me, Mr. Henry. Steve, don't talk until I'm done. And let's see, what else am I upset about?
Yeah, make sure you get it all out.
That's it.
Okay, now may I talk to your husband?
Go ahead.
Steve, what did you just say?
I said, I heard my wife did a thing.
No, I know what he said.
Would you let him say it, please, Ms. Dooley?
Ms. Dooley,
Why are you stuttering and going, Why are you doing that? Is it because you have a guilty conscience?
I do have a guilty conscience. When it comes to a woman eating a Twinkie in slow motion, it makes me wonder what happened to me in my life that I can't enjoy something like that.
A Twinkie?
No, not the woman eating it.
All right, enough of the sidebar chatter. What were you saying, Mr. Dooley?
You've scared my husband, Mr. Henry. All right, can you slow down?
Oh, I've scared him, have I?
Yes, you've scared him. Dave, come here.
I'm scared.
Come here. Go on.
Yep, Jenny. I was in the bathroom. I was lifting weights.
You were lifting weights in your bathroom?
In the bedroom. I had to go to the bathroom. And I lifted a weight and I heard a scream.
I'll take it from here, Steve. He heard me screaming. All right?
Well, this is exactly what we wanted to hear. You taking it from here, because your husband is a babbling imbecile. We can't understand a word he's saying. And we are certainly interested, Ms. Dooley, in what it is he has to say, unless, of course, you can say it better.
That's exactly what I'm attempting to do. I'm attempting to say to you, Mr. Henry, that my husband... I screamed when I saw...
The first what?
When I saw Ms. Guilfoyle biting into that Twinkie and it was in slow motion, when I saw the first bits of the cream filling...
Saw the first bits of the cream filling come out of the Twinkie and...
All right, okay, I get it.
But you understand what she's saying?
I understand what she's saying.
That's when I started to scream. And I must have screamed for I don't know how long. It felt like it was hours, but I know...
It was only a couple minutes, because I was screaming, and I was still in the middle of some curls. And
you were in the... I'm sorry?
I was in the middle of doing some bicep curls.
And you were in the middle, Mr. Dooley, this is Herb Sewell. You're in the middle of doing bicep curls, correct?
That's right.
And you did not stop the bicep curls to see what was wrong with your wife. You wanted to continue those.
Steve does 10 reps, and then he rests, 10 reps, and then he rests. And I started screaming when?
And I was in the middle of the second 10.
You're in the middle of your second 10 set of repetitions with your bicep curls. Your wife is screaming, but you're not going to put those dumbbells down and go and see what's wrong until you're done. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah. Kidding?
I may be a criminal and a felon and a reprobate beyond the pale and an individual who will never be forgiven or forgotten by society at large. I give you all of that, Mr. and Mrs. Dooley, but I can assure you, even I, Herb Sewell, even I don't understand a husband putting the dumbbells down and taking his own dumbbell ass out.
I object to that kind of language and referring to my husband that way.
I think it is applicable, Miss Dooley. Your husband is doing 10 reps with his dumbbells or whatever he calls it, and the real dumbbell is him and the fact that he doesn't go to see what his dumbbell wife... Well,
okay.
You know what? I don't need this. I really don't.
You call my wife dumbbell.
That's exactly what I called her, sir. Your wife is a dumbbell. You're a dumbbell. You have dumbbells in your bedroom. For all I know, you crap dumbbells. That's all I have to say. Good evening to you.
Okay, Ms. Dooley, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, and to be honest with you, I'm much more comfortable without having that pervert on the phone.
Well, I'll tell you one thing about that pervert, as you call him. He's the only one that was making sense of the three of you. Okay?
you talking about?
What am I talking about? Herb Sewell, that pervert, that felon, that convicted child molester, all the things you say he was the only one making sense. He was absolutely right. Why did you not stop with the dumbbells and go and see what was wrong with your wife?
Because I knew she was looking at a Twinkie.
He knew that what I was screaming at was the Twinkie cream filling and the fact that it had come, it squished.
So you were screaming, and you don't know for how long, and you don't know, you might have blacked out because Kimberly Guilfoyle ate a Twinkie in slow motion, and the cream filling came out, and it looked all real weird and quasi-sexual and symbolic and offensive.
In a word, yes.
In a word, yes. Okay. What is it that you want me to do, Ms. Dooley?
You know what, Mr. Henry, when I first came on your program, I wanted you to perhaps understand what I was saying and understand how I was representing the voice of millions of American women and children. But you know what? After listening to you and your pervert friend, there isn't really much you can do for me, Mr. Henry. I don't think there's very much you can do for you. And when I say you, I'm really referring to your everlasting soul. Because I think by this time, say, tomorrow night, maybe 9, 10 o'clock, your soul will be black with Satan's defecation. Good evening to you.
Well, that certainly put a capper on that, didn't it?
Put a capper on it? I think there, as I've thought for many years, that there's something wrong with her.
Yeah, but she just said that Satan's going to crap all over you.
No. Did she really, bud? I've about had it with the insults. You know that? I've had it with the insults. I've had it with being told I'm going to cook in hell. That part I'm really tired of.
Yeah, but I mean, it's free speech of America.
Yeah, I get all about free speech, you know? The free speech that we got in this country nowadays, my God, I wouldn't let that pass for scribblings on a bathroom wall in some ages, in some of the epics and the eras that mankind has passed through. What we call free speech today wouldn't pass for graffiti in a catacomb toilet. Thank you. My name is Phil Hendry. We'll be right back after these messages here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth. That's pretty good, Mr. Hendry.
Well, thank you very
the
much.
Phil Hendry Show.
Yeah, Mr. Hendry, I just jumped out of just calling in. Yeah, that was really bitching.
Yeah, Mr. Hendry, this is Archie.
All right, welcome back. You're the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. I'm going to tonight go over to whatever Twitter feed, and maybe in the next few minutes we'll get a Twitter feed up that is reflective of the alleged dialogue happening right now in the Twitterverse between Israel and between Israel and its opponents, let's say. I don't even want to characterize them as Palestinians because I don't know that Israel's opponents are Palestinians. I really don't. And I'm not about to pander to the propagandists, especially in this country. The most dishonest conversation happening about Israel and Palestine right now, or the Israeli-Arab conflict, or whatever the hell you want to call it, happens here in the United States. Because in the United States, we got a bullcrap machine that works overtime, as you well know. And anybody can have access to it. That's how free we are. This country is a free nation. It's the freest nation on earth. And what does that mean? What it means is everyone has equal access to the bullcrap machine. You can generate all kinds of bullcrap. And you can send it all kinds of places. Because the truth is difficult. The truth means study. The truth means perspective. The truth means argument and debate. The truth means making an intelligent point. And of course, it also means someone willing to receive it. In America, a country in love with Facebook and Twitter and these other instantaneous bullcrap machines, we're not in love with the truth. We're just in love with, you know, spreading our bad, funky breath wherever we go.
God, Mr. Henry, that's pretty cynical.
That's exactly what we're interested in. In the United States, it isn't truth so much as it's bad breath. And so Twitter tonight is alive with the comments of all kinds of people outraged and indignant on both sides. I happen to personally, and I'm not going to say, you know, I shouldn't say it, because one of the things that's a death knell for anybody that, you know, purports to do humor is to give an opinion about something. Because I, you know, right away, if somebody doesn't share my point of view, I don't think they're funny. You know, I just, I'm sorry. Well, I shouldn't say that. There's some people that I think are really funny who don't share my point of view. I mentioned like Randy Rhodes. I think she's funny. Stephanie Miller is funny. For some reason, I don't find either Jon Stewart or the other guy. What's his name?
Stephen Colbert.
Stephen, I don't find either one of those guys funny. I don't. And I'm not saying I don't find liberals funny. I do. Like Lionel. I think Lionel's funny. Maybe I'm not that bright. Maybe I don't get how cool and sophisticated. I don't. Bill Maher, not only is Bill Maher not funny, he's now taken on the persona of kind of a crusty, cranky hack. You know? I mean, especially when he starts laying out lines about how, what was that line he had about the brothers? You know, he did a Michael Moore. He fell into the black person as the badass ass kicker stereotype, and he invoked that as a sort of a comedic threat. I just find the guy kind of, you know, I don't like him. But be that as it may, now tonight we've got on Twitter people that are slinging the arrows of outrageous fortune at each other, Israel and Palestine. And I'm going to try and get a Twitter feed going here. I try to find a Twitter feed. Pardon me if for those of you watching Phil TV in HD, if I go off of camera slightly here as I enter in twitter.com, and we'll see just what the hell we find. What do you think, bud?
Well, I think there's probably, if you enter in like Twitter, Twitter Jew?
Or what do you mean Twitter Jew? You think that's going to bring up anything other than, it'll probably bring up some comedy account. Let's take a look here. This is my Twitter account here. Some of you may be able to see this online. Real Phil Hendry. These are my tweets. Which, by the way, this is a picture of me. I don't know if, and you don't have to have Phil TV and HD to listen to this description, but we have a thing called Flashback Friday. And on Flashback Friday, we show some pictures of me. And this is one of me and Steve Downs and Tommy Caldwell and Pam May, and I'm in the studios of KWST Radio back in 1980, and I'm the guy with the smiling face. So
that's what you call the Flashback Friday picture.
That's our Flashback Friday picture. Now, here's one from last – no, this is one from last night. That's a picture of the floor of my studio with a spoon, a plate.
Oh, my God. Why don't you vacuum the floor in here?
Well, I'll tell you why, Margaret, because I got people coming in here and throwing up.
I haven't thrown up in here for a couple of weeks.
Well, isn't that fantastic? I've got, there's my L.A. Rams hat, there's an empty bottle of French's mustard, and there's a plate and there's a spoon. So what do you want from me? And then we have my Little League picture.
This picture here, is this a real picture or did you fake it?
What do you mean, did I fake it? How could I fake it?
Mark, you got some kids to do that.
That's me in Little League.
Let me see this. Well, the name says Hendry, but that doesn't say anything.
Oh, come on, Margaret. Are you nuts or something? It's a black and white picture. Doesn't that look like me?
Well, I'll admit it's a cute little boy. Is it you? I don't know.
It's me. It's me in Little League in the Arcadia Coast League back in the day. That's Mr. Brennan, our coach, and Mr. Combs was our other coach. And they were great guys. And they didn't molest us. And they didn't do anything inappropriate to us, and they didn't say anything weird, and they taught us baseball, and then we went and we had our Little League banquet at Little Joe's Italian Restaurant in downtown L.A., and I remember how much fun that was, and these are all my little teammates, and we had a ball, you know.
Well, what do you mean they didn't molest you?
Well, you know, all these talk today, good God almighty, can't turn around, there isn't some adult acting like a freaking animal. I remember Mr. Brennan, he was our coach. He was just a nice man. He taught us baseball. He taught us the basics of baseball. He taught us how to slide. He taught us how to run the bases. He taught us how to catch. He taught us how to throw. He taught us how to bat. The strike zone, he taught us baseball. And he was a nice man, and so was Mr. Combs. He had a son on the team. They're just nice guys. Nothing weird, nothing, you know, about them at all. What I do remember about both of those men is that they were very patient. They never once raised their voices. What I liked about both these guys, they never raised their voices. They never, ever yelled at us. In other words, they didn't treat the game as if it was them revisiting their glory days. They were there to do what you should do at Little League, teach kids how to play baseball. And as it turned out, that very patient approach, we were a good little team. We had, you know, we won a lot of games and we were in it to the end. And then I remember when we lost, we all started to cry, which probably, you know.
Well, that would have been embarrassing, bawling like a woman.
Bawling like a woman?
Well, yeah, you don't stand there.
I was 11 years old. Is that okay?
Still and all, Phil, you do have family up there. You're there crying like a bitch. I'm joking.
Dan!
Now, I'm sure you're 11 years old crying like a little bitch.
Yes, if you want to call it that, I was 11 years old crying like a bitch. This is a picture of Brian and me and Jill from the Brian and Jill Show. Here I am on the plane heading back to D.C., and the caption I can't read on the air, but it has something to do with, Billy remembers the envelope too late now, and here's another picture which people can't see on the radio. So just go to our Twitter feed, and there's a picture of me as a 16-year-old in high school, and this is a beautiful picture of our sunset. So go to twitter.com/realphilhenry. You can take a look at our Twitter feed, but tonight what we are trying to find is a decent Twitter feed having to do with the Israeli-Gaza action and what is happening in social media. So during this next break, we're going to do that. Bud, are you on that?
Yeah, I'm going to go over and probably look on it, put a hashtag and everything.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea. We have one here that Dan Northcraft has found. And Dan, I can't read that because I'm blind. Gaza, okay? Found one named This Is Gaza. All right, we'll go to that. We'll go to that during our break, and you guys can follow along with us. One of the most profoundly moving things for me during the whole Iran. You remember the Green Revolution?
Yes.
Okay. What happened for me was that really turned me on to the whole social media thing big time. That was back in June of 2009. And there were posts from Iran that were just amazing. There was a girl who read a poem from a rooftop. People were praying, and they were praying out of their windows. I guess the Muslim tradition is to pray sometimes in full voice out of your window at night so that it just goes to the heavens. And there were people shouting prayers out of the windows of their homes on this night in Tehran. And it was on one of the most desperate nights of this green revolution that had taken place when the police were in the streets. And it was just a very tough situation. And this girl was listening to this, and she was reciting, she was just narrating her thoughts and her feelings on this YouTube clip. Some of you guys might remember it. It was pretty amazing, and it was really beautiful. I don't know who she is. I know it survives on YouTube because it was the most moving thing in the world. I don't know whether it does good or not, man, but we'll see, you know.
I think Twitter probably does a lot of good for jokes and stuff.
Yeah. Yes, Twitter is a good place to go to have jokes retweeted. Other than that, freedom fighting and the betterment of mankind, probably not. All right, we'll be right back.
Well, Phil, don't sound all cynical. I mean, we can't change the world with Twitter or whatever you call it.
You're right. All right, we'll be right back, however, with Twitter or Twitter. And some good jokes, or not, on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.
During our break, we've been looking at thanks to Dan Northcraft, we found a Twitter feed called This Is Gaza. And, you know, if you look at these, look at the comments on This Is Gaza, this is from the people who run This Is Gaza. Brother, this is Israel, the root cause of all evil in the world. If Gandhi were a Palestinian, Israel would kill him. First, Israel was established. Millions were murdered and displaced. 53 years later, Palestinians reacted by rockets made in Gaza. Then there's some cat who is telling them that they're, you know, stupid and they ought to be looking at this other dude. And they're calling him brother. They say, brother, we all agree on what you say. But again, look at what Israel is doing for a boss in the West Bank. Israel loves death. Abbas is the prime minister of the Palestinian Authority in the West Bank. Israel needs no excuse to kill Palestinians. Israel kills day and night. Occupation is the source of evil. Gaza resistance knows their rockets are nothing compared to Israelis, but we have to defend ourselves. We have to. Now, you know, this is the Hamas. People are probably saying, well, I mean, is it true or is it true? Let me tell you something. Number one, this is not any specific statement of position. This is a whole big, broad bunch of crap from Hamas about how Israel loves death and that they're defending themselves by firing their rockets from Gaza. Now, you're really defending yourselves. What you've brought on, man, is a full-scale invasion of Gaza. You're really doing some good stuff there. You know, there's all kinds of ways you can go about helping yourselves, Gaza. You can insist, for instance, that the so-called support that you, the verbal support and the propaganda support you get from the Arab states, you can say, let's get some real action going here. What kind of money do you guys want to commit to this? How do you want to build this base? How do you want to build this platform? How do we want to proceed to something constructive? As opposed to you guys just sort of joining in and saying, let's just kill all Israelis and we have to defend ourselves, but we have nothing compared to what the weapons they have. I mean, it's a losing battle all the way for the Palestinians doing this bullcrap that they've been doing since 1940, whatever.
Well, what are they supposed to do, Phil? Are they supposed to just sit back and let the Israelis occupy land that was theirs? It was their land.
Yes, it was. It was their land under the British Mandate. It was their land under the Turkish Ottoman Empire. It was their land, but it was never their land. They've always been occupied or under the administration of some outside force. It was the Turkish Ottoman Empire for 500 years. Then it was the British after World War I. And then finally comes World War II. This is a part of the world that up until World War I was controlled by the Turks. Are they Arab? What are they, by the way?
What?
The people from Turkey.
What do you mean, what are they? They're white people.
I know they're white people. Are they Arabs? Is Turkey... What is Turkey?
Turkey is Assyrian, I believe. Excuse me, I'm going to belch. I'm sorry. Oh, God, that felt good. What are you looking at?
Is it with you belching? Is there anything that you do, Margaret, that you can do that a little bit more ladylike than just coming up with a belch? I'd really appreciate that. All right, so what is Turkey?
I was going to say Turkey is a collection of mongrelized, and by mongrelized, I don't mean anything negative. Excuse me. Oh, God.
I'll do it.
Would you get me a Diet Coke?
No, I'm working.
I didn't mean you. I meant it. I mean him.
I'm working right now. Thank you. Mr. Henry, what was the question what you asked?
What are Turks? Are they Arabs?
The Turks are...
The Turks.
Oh, they're Turks. Well, okay, great. They're Turks.
Why do you have to know?
Well, I mean, I'd like to know if the people of the Middle East were happy with being dictated to and controlled by an empire, a caliphate, that was centered there in Turkey. Now, in Ankara, or whatever the hell capital was. Now, it doesn't matter whether they were Turks, because the argument would be, well, they were Muslims, and that's more important. It was a Muslim caliphate. It was the last great Muslim empire the world has known, and its ass came apart in World War I because they decided to support the Germans. But more to the point, it, like any other empire, fell apart. I don't give a damn if it's a Muslim empire, if it's run by Little Red Riding Hood, if it's run by Wiccans, if it's Roman Catholic. All empires by that point in history were a absolutely ridiculous notion. You couldn't hold together all those different ethnicities under the banner of good King Wenceslas or whoever the guy was. It wasn't going to happen. So the Ottoman Empire was ripe to fall, and fall it did, just as the Austrian-Hungarian Empire did, and just as eventually the British Empire did, even though the British Empire was nowhere near the decrepit institution, these other two. The British Empire was an empire that had a quasi-democratic underpinning that was far more respectful of its, of the countries that it ruled. You know, Germany it wasn't, and they were not about to go in and slaughter millions of Indians, although they tried, before they gave them their independence. Now, where does that bring us?
Yeah, where does that bring us?
Yes, where does that bring us?
It brings us to, I hope this is a commercial break, because I don't know where the hell I'm going after this. No, it brings us to this. It brings us to the fact that the Palestinians now, after World War II, are sitting there and they're saying, now the British are out of here, thank God. But what do we have in its place? Well, now you got something new. What's that? The United Nations. Well, what's the United Nations? The United Nations is that body of nations that banded together to defeat the fascist entities, Germany, Japan, and so forth. The United Nations is the new one, baby. And we now run Palestine. We're going to call the shots, and we're going to have a vote. Now, what do you think about this? A Palestinian and Jewish side-by-side states. The Israelis, the Jewish Congress said, sure. Initially, the Arabs signed off on it, although there was all kinds of dissension in the ranks, and eventually they broke apart and they said, no, we don't like that idea. There was a Palestinian state and there was a Jewish state on the table as part of a UN resolution. Now, let me ask you a question before we go any further. Don't we hear an awful lot about UN resolutions being respected and UN resolutions being broken, or are we now going to go down the same little road that we've been going down, which is, well, they broke it, so why can't we?
Well, Phil, the UN resolutions that have been broken by Israel are numerous, too numerous to count.
Oh, and why do you care about UN resolutions?
What do you mean, why do I care about UN resolutions? That is, if you sign your name, you know, I know this is a trick question.
No, it's not a trick question, but if you're telling me let's respect UN resolutions, well, there's one UN resolution that hasn't been respected at all by the Arab states, and that's the resolution setting up Israel as a country. That's a country. The Arabs don't want that UN resolution. They want all the other ones, but not that one. Now, you can say what you want, but Hamas and Hezbollah, and you'd have to be blind not to see this, Hamas and Hezbollah, they don't care about dead Palestinians. They use dead Palestinians as a way to fight the propaganda war. That's a war they can win. That's a war they can win, especially in the United States, with a bunch of soft-headed Americans who don't know their ass from a hole in the ground about this conflict, who will sit there and say, because, you know, a lot of Americans are anti-Semitic anyway. There's a lot of Americans on both the left and the right. Let's face it, okay? Far left, far right, liberal, conservative. It's the one thing that both conservatives and progressives agree on. They really got a problem with Jews, you know?
That is not a problem with Jews. That's a problem of an oppressing state, Israel.
How do you sit there with a straight face and call Israel 5 million people an oppressing state against 500 million Arabs? Are you serious? Are you serious?
I don't know. I'm just saying I don't hate Jews. I don't hate anyone. I don't like Jews, but I really do. Well,
you're married to a Jew.
Yes.
Michael, how come his name ain't... Yeah, his name's Gray. Did he change it so nobody'd know?
You know, I'm gonna...
She's turning her ring around. Hey, Margaret, don't do it.
Next time, I won't turn the ring around.
I was just asking.
Bud, why don't you shut up, okay?
But,
man, did he change his name for good because he didn't want to be a Jew?
Frank is Jewish. I'm married to a Jewish man. We're raising Jason J. Delmonico as a Catholic because that's what I prefer, because I'd rather my son be raised Catholic and not walking around with the thing. I don't want him to...
What?
I don't want my son looking like Dr. Loris.
What a...
What a what?
What a thing to say, Margaret.
What did I say?
You don't want your...
Shh! I don't want it all on me.
Miss Gray, everybody can hear it on the radio.
How many times we got to tell you that you're on the radio and people can just turn up the volume and hear what you're saying?
Well, then let them turn the volume up because I'm a lady and I'm not going to say it out loud.
Oh, you're a lady and you're not going to say out loud what I just heard you say... Which is,
would you shut? I don't want my son walking around looking like that kid that learns.
What?
Do you want me to repeat it?
Yeah, I'd like you to repeat it in English, because what I just heard there sounded like either Munchkin or...
Go ahead, Munchkin!
Yeah, hey, why don't you say it something other than Munchkin?
You know what I'll do is I've got a big 3-carat diamond. I'm going to bring that in from home. I'm going to leave that thing turned around, and I'm going to aim right for the eye. Now, what do you want me to say?
Don't forget it. Don't say it. I'll say it. Okay?
I'd appreciate it if you wouldn't.
No, I'm going to say it. You don't want your son looking like Dr. Laura's. Okay?
Laura, if you're listening, I only mean the beanie.
The beanie. Margaret, I think you're anti-Semitic. I think you probably married Frank despite the fact that he's Jewish.
How dare you?
No, no, don't give me the how dare I. This is how you're talking. This is who you are. Don't give me your bull crap, okay? And you don't like Israel, and you take the side of the Palestinians because it's a convenient propaganda side to take, and it makes you look like a good guy, and it makes you look like you're defending all the weaklings. And where are you going?
You're on the toilet?
I was told I can't leave, so yes, I'm going to the toilet. You know why? Because every time you start talking that, I feel the need to eliminate it.
Well, that was pretty good. All right, we're going to... Huh?
Yeah, I think she's talking about...
Never mind. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Henry Show. I don't want my son looking like Dr. Laura's. Whatever. I mean, what's wrong with that? He's a handsome, fine young man. We'll be right back. Phil Henry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show. Phil Henry Show.
So we're still looking at this as Gaza. Here's a comment. I can't take anybody serious. It says, Jewish Zionists are rejoicing the deaths and destruction their Jewish government causing to Gaza. Yes. That's right. The Israeli criminals are still shelling civilians with offensive weapons. That's the plain truth. The fact is that the Palestinian militants, if you want to call them that, are lobbing what they call homemade rockets into Israeli territory. Okay, and they're admitting that. And what they're getting upset with is that Israel is responding with their own weapons, which happen to be 1 ton in weight. And for some reason, in the weird world that that Hamas lives and the militants in Gaza, you're not supposed to do that. If they're shooting homemade rockets that kill people, then in their world, you should shoot back homemade rockets that kill the equal number of people. They're all pissed off that Israel killed 30 Palestinians and all they did was kill like 3 or 4 Israelis. That's not right. That's not fair. And Israel is a really bad guy and we're just defending ourselves? From what, man? I mean, if you're defending yourself from the fact that Israel exists, okay, I understand. That's the long-standing feud. That's the bullcrap that's been going on since before I was born. So, okay, I get it, you know. And everybody's getting tired of that one. Because sooner or later, the world, if you're asking for the world's help, the world is going to say, you're going to have to figure a way to work this out, man. You know, because if you want the world's help, the world, at least as far as Phil Henry is concerned, is going to have to respond this way. Both of these peoples, Israel and Palestine, they both get to have countries. They both get to be, you know, to live and exist. And no, this bullcrap that you guys are pulling ain't going to stand. And your horse dung arguments about how we only have homemade rockets and Israel has 1 ton jobs, you know.
But you talk about 1 ton.
That's the size of the rockets that Israel's throwing in there. And then, of course, I have to like this. This is a kind of a funny tweet, if you want me to laugh. This one guy said, have you ever heard of a terrorist stadium? Well, Israel just destroyed, Israel just blew up the only grass football stadium we had in Gaza. It took us 4 years to build. I'm sorry, I'm laughing. Have you ever heard of a terrorist stadium? Yep, Israel has just destroyed only Gaza grass football playground. Well, I got a great idea. Why don't you not put rockets there? Why don't you not put rockets in hospitals? Why don't you not put rockets? Are you guys kidding? Who do you think you're talking to? This bullcrap plays in the Middle East. Unfortunately, although the people of the Middle East are getting smarter because they all of a sudden looked and they figured out that these cats that run Egypt and that scumbag that runs Syria and all the rest of them, they ain't exactly what they had in mind as good leaders. So they're reacting to that. And maybe one day they'll wake up and realize that they're being lied to by these people, too. But the fact is, that kind of stuff still plays. Oh, look, they blew up our football stadium. You guys had the rockets there in the stadium.
How do you know they had rockets in that stadium? You don't know.
No, I don't. I don't. I just, I'll tell you this, though. Let me ask you a question, okay?
Wait a minute. How do you know they had, you don't know. Israel purposefully targeted that soccer stadium to destroy it and to take from the Palestinian people the only real joy they have.
Wait. Let me just, can I ask you something?
Answer my question first.
What's your question?
Why would Israel destroy the only joy that those people have. I'll tell you why.
Because they're Jews?
Okay, you know what? I'm going to start calling you Hitler. I'm going to call you Phil Hitler from now on. No, I'm going to call you the Adolf Henry.
Margaret, your arguments are going that way.
How are my arguments going that way?
What possible good is Israel going to get out of blowing up a soccer stadium unless they truly believe there's artillery there or places where rockets are being fired? You know they're losing the propaganda battle. Yeah, I'm Israel. I think what I'll do is go and even pile on the civilian deaths and the civilian destruction because that's really going to help me with the world. Let's go and blow up their football stadium and make them cry and make them grieve, and the pictures will go around the world and we will look so good. What are you talking about?
I think it's because they're stupid. They don't know what they're doing.
Israel doesn't know what they're doing militarily. That's pretty funny. You know, they've survived all these years with enemies on all sides, but they don't know what they're doing. You got to be kidding. They're going to go out and blow up a football stadium because they just want to make Palestinians cry and be upset and be cruel because that just gives them all kinds of kicks. You know what, man? The Hamas is accusing Israel of the very things they do. That's what they do. That's how they think.
I think, Phil, that you have spent too many years buying into the international Jewish the international Jewish media. No, I don't want Frank to hear that.
What? You know, I'm going to call Frank up. Call up Frank.
Don't you dare.
I'm calling up your husband right now. Get him on the phone.
You got it, Mr. Henry. Ow!
Don't hit him.
I don't like him mocking me.
I'm calling up Frank Gray. We'll get to the bottom of this right now.
Call him up. I'm going to find out exactly what's going on, okay? Because to me, Margaret, I think it is untoward of you, if you don't mind me saying, to keep with this whole
the Jewish this, the Jewish that. I didn't say Jewish this and that. I was being very specific about, you know, Jews.
Yeah, you know, Jews. Have you got him?
What's his number?
What do you mean, what's his number? I'm on the air right now. Would you hurry up, please?
Yes, sir.
I can give you the number if you want. Don't you dare. If you ask my husband any embarrassing questions, so help me God.
Who's that?
That's the outside line coming in.
Well, get them off. I don't want the outside line coming in, okay? I want Frank Gray on my phone right now. Get him. Meantime, folks, remember to get a backstage pass to the Phil Hendry Show website. Is a beautiful thing, and it's going to be something that you can long enjoy. Okay. Who's that?
I think that might be him calling in. Hey, Frank? Yeah, hi. You don't let us call you. Yeah. Okay, bye. We're going to call him, right?
Yes, we're going to call him. So we'll get to the bottom of this. What is that?
Frank? Yeah, what are you doing? No, you got to...
Give me the... Just put him on the air, will you? Put him on the air, will you? Hey, Frank.
Yeah, Frank Gray.
What are you doing calling us?
I thought that's what he said to do.
Who?
Margaret.
No, we want you to sit there and wait for us to call you.
All right. Is he there?
Frank, honey, it's Margaret.
Yeah, what do you want?
Frank, you're Jewish. But don't you think that the international...
Oh, is he going to do this again? We just got into this morning. I told you, you've got your head wedged, all right? There's no international Jewish anything. Now, I'm telling you, and I'm going to say this for the last time, I love you, but you know as well as I do that our son listens to this stuff that spews out of your mouth, Margaret, and she is being influenced by it. You understand that, right?
Yes, I do, Frank, but...
And I don't want to hear any more of this nonsense. I want you and Jason J. Delmonico, we're going to go over and see Rabbi Steve, because she is someone we can talk to. Don't you agree?
Yes.
So I want Jason J. Delmonico, you and me, to talk to Rabbi Steve and her wife. And I think the five... Does that make five of us or four? I forget.
That would be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
All right, the five of us... You, Jason J. Delmonico, and Mrs. Rabbi Steve, and you know he makes great dinner, and Rabbi Steve, she can read, well, you know that.
Phil Hendry.